We have time for one more question, one last question. Stephanie Watt.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Watt from McGee. Public education means equal opportunity for all students. Yet in this system, at least in BC, there are a few smaller schools within the bigger schools called mini schools. There are only 30 students in each grade. These students are handpicked according to their academic achievements, hobbies, and involvement in the community. The mini school students experience many stimulating field trips, both near and afar, throughout the school year. They also apparently receive a higher level of education. It's like a private school within the public school system. What seems to be the issue, in my eyes, is that the vast majority of these students come from very savvy parents who are well-educated and are aware of what's out there for their children. The more disadvantaged students, who may be just as bright, whose parents don't have the language, knowledge, or the time to investigate these educational opportunities, miss out. These students are often the ones who need the exposure to week-long outdoor trips, Shakespeare festivals, and more challenge in the classroom. So they simply miss out because of their circumstances. Do you think this is a level playing field in the public school system?
I actually don't know much about this. I heard about it for the first time this morning. The thing that struck me about it was that the aim seemed to be that you did it, you basically did it in one less year.
No?
Okay, I didn't understand. You know, I can't comment on the specific because I don't know that much about it. So in the general, you know, I think it's one of the problems we have today, and I'm not avoiding the question, one of the problems we have today is, actually your high schools aren't too big because they seem to go from about 700 to help me, 2,000. Well, I personally think 2,000 is rather large. I mean, I think that, you know, 1,200 is about the right size. And I think actually the bigger the city, the smaller the school ought to be. Yeah. Whereas if you go into a smaller community, that's where it's good to have a big school, because that makes people, well, they get the maximum advantage out of being in a smaller community. And so this movement towards 2,000, 2,400, I think is really quite disastrous. Particularly, remember in my speech, I said we're in a period of interesting forms of instability, which are, you know, high levels of divorce, a lot of new Canadians, so that's, you know, they're trying to find their way. Instability in the job market, and then the disappearance of, it used to be, you see, when you went to school, out around school, there were all these clubs and churches and, you know, institutions. Most of those are gone. So there's kind of instability around the schools as well. And so I think that what's quite important to come to terms with, and this is why, another reason why public education is so important, is that the last institution that we have in our middle class democracy that actually functions as a kind of real community center is the public school. And therefore we have to, for reasons beyond education, mere education, we have to think of these schools as being something from which we can rebuild, having lost. And I'm not making judgment, having lost the schools and the clubs and all the rest of it to a great extent. Now, if you were, you know, have 1,000 kids or 1,200 kids, if you have 2,000 kids, my God, that's too many for them to create a society among themselves. So within the schools, it's very important to have societies, communities. They may be the clubs. What was the global, what did we hear about this morning? Global? Yeah, global interest clubs, the volunteerism clubs, the, you know, there's just dozens and dozens of things. French immersion. And so I don't know about this particular thing, but I think what is interesting is to try and, you don't want a level playing field, because that again is a kind of business term which implies that everything is exactly the same and it's a competition. It isn't a competition. And it isn't about being level. It's really about inclusivity. I think really inclusivity is the right word to use in Canada. And that you know, people who have handicaps, well, they're going to come at it in another way. You know, so you have to, what we have to do in these schools is find dozens and dozens and dozens of multiple ways. Is that multiple personality order? Well, we have to have multiple community order. inside the schools. And the fact that some people might follow an arts program more, and some people want to follow a science program, and some people really want to get out there, the more difference there is inside the school, frankly, the better. The less it's all, you're all going to write the same exam, you're all going to, and what we're going to do, you know, is measure exactly the results of the exams to tell which the best school is. That's where the problem comes, is that very utilitarian, linear approach. Now, the other comment I would make is, and I think this is one of the biggest challenges we've got in this country, I mentioned, you know, what about the small communities in the north? And this morning I talked a little bit about this at Glasgow. You know, we're moving towards a moment when an enormous majority of Canadians are going to be living in, what, six cities or something? We've done quite well with these cities, and I think we're actually doing better and better with them. We went through a little bad patch, but I think we're actually pulling ourselves together and finding ways of doing it. That's where Vancouver is really on the cutting edge in many ways. Has some real challenges too, but cutting edge. But with so many of our citizens living in these cities, it creates the impression that that's what Canada's about. Whereas in fact it represents like 0.5% of the landmass or something. And this country won't function if urban Canada thinks that Canada is about the cities, out of context with the landmass. And you know, for one thing, we'll lose it. Somebody will take it. I don't know how it'll happen. It doesn't matter how it happens. It'll happen because there are no vacuums in global politics. It'll fall apart. And it's going to be very, very difficult for these cities to be able to imagine the other, which is to say the rest of the country, the small communities. In reality, in spite of all the talk about the difficulties of land claim negotiations and all the rest, the reality is that the Aboriginal people and a small group of non-Aboriginals and Métis living in 3/4 of the country are in the process of becoming the custodians of that part of the country because they're the people who want to live there. Because they want to live there, they're going to be the custodians. But if you can't imagine what that means, then we're in trouble. I'm coming to my point. My point is that we have this enormous wave of new Canadians coming, and they're coming to the cities. What are we doing about helping them to understand and get them out into the summer camps, into the rest? We're bad enough at getting the old Canadians out. We're even worse at getting the new Canadians out. And that creates yet another problem in terms of imagining the whole country. And it's not their fault. It's our fault. And I think there's a real job to be done in terms of saying we have to make an effort to somehow move our youth, in particular our new Canadian youth, for periods of time into camps, out into the country, up north, and start moving people around. Otherwise, we're in deep trouble.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think we're going to have to wind it up. There is one more student here tonight. There is one more student here tonight who has a question as an adult learner.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Where is he?
Would you like to stand up and ask your question? Identify yourself, please. Thanks. Thank you.
It's Kurt Driver, representing the Roberts Adult Education Center in the West End of Vancouver. Could you please share with us your assessment of the current climate of public opinion with regard to financing of adult education in Canada?
Well, you know, it's a curious thing because on the one hand, there's an enormous amount of talk about, you know, what is it, retraining? Is that the phrase? Which is really, again, it's a utilitarian term which is tied to the instability in the job market. You know, people just have to keep changing the kinds of jobs they're doing. But in a way, I think that's sort of missing the boat. It isn't actually this. We probably have to look at it in a broader way, and I think it's a big investment we're going to need to be making. In a way, it's tied to the fact that we, again, hadn't realized that even if you're not going to live to be 100 theoretically, in theory, you see, because you're not being born today. But still, people are living longer and longer, and therefore there is a real need for people to sort of reconsider their lives at various points through their lives. And one of the ways you reconsider your life is through education. So there's a utilitarian aspect to it. but there's a large civilizational inclusivity aspect to it. And I don't think we should allow the idea of adult education to get squeezed into the retraining argument. We really have to. And I have a lot of friends who teach in the adult education field, and what excites them most is, frankly, is doing philosophy and, you know, literature, things like that, because this is actually giving people who are a little bit older the opportunity to rethink the way they imagine their lives and their families and their society. You don't do that in a utilitarian manner. You do that by reading War and Peace or by talking about, you know, the nature of public good. And that allows you, gosh, you know, I want to be in another part of this society. I want to come at it in a different way. And you've got all this experience. I mean, why would the society want to throw that experience away? But we throw it away if we sort of limit it to saying, this guy's out of work, we better retrain them or something like that. You know, it's really, how do we capitalize on an experience and give a kind of freedom to those people so that they can actually make another kind of, perhaps for them, unexpected contribution to society? This is investment. Not, let me just say one more thing. You know, I talked about accountancy. In private sector accountancy, and this is accepted by government, there are basically three columns, you know, money going in, money going out, and investment. And you pay a different tax on the basis of whether it's one, you know, you don't pay the same if it's investment. The theory which has been imposed on the public sector in the last 20 years is this sort of theory of, you know, we must be efficient, there must be no debts. And it's only got two columns, in and out. It doesn't have the investment column. So we're actually running the most, you know, if I were to use private sector terminology, the most complex corporation that exists in the world, which is, say, the nation state, but it isn't a corporation at all, but, you know, the most complex body that exists in the world, and we're running it on a theory which is used for corner stores. You know, oh, I bought 3 dozen oranges, now I'm going to sell 3 dozen oranges, and I have a margin of... Makes no sense at all, because education is not a cost. Education is an investment. Once you get that, this is why the theory is so important. You know, the problem with people who are sort of imposing it, utilitarian inevitabilities on you is they're trying to stop you from thinking about what the assumption is. And the assumption is there's only in and out. Once you step back and say to yourself, actually, there's a third column in the public good, and the third column is actually the most important column. That's what allows you to build a civilization. That's investment. And education is central to that. Suddenly, you look at cost in a totally different way. And, I mean, that's a step we have to take, and it has not been taken in the public debate. Thank you.